How is it going, everyone? It is once again me, Chewy, and I am one of the hosts of this horror podcast titled Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. And what we do in this podcast is try to analyze something related to the horror genre, typically a movie, but not limited to that. We can also talk about stories, shows, etc. And we try to talk about the plot, stuff that we may have done or come across in our past experiences that relates to the topic at hand. So, for this episode, we are excited because it is the closer for our 8th season, and we really hope you guys enjoy it. The topic for today's episode is none other than the 2022 version of the film Hellraiser. Before we start, though, I want to remind everyone to check out our Linktree page, linktree.com/mythsbehindLGDS, where you can find all of our social media accounts. And also, before we start, we are taking a short commercial break, and then we will jump right into the discussion of the 2022 version of the film Hellraiser. Stick around. Okay, Mariah, so we are ready to start the discussion on this, but before I start the discussion, I want to remind you of something. I don't know if you remember.
Ooh, enlighten me.
And actually, this is something that I just figured out a couple days ago, so I just reminded myself, technically. But this episode would be the 13th in our 8th season, which means that this is the closer for season 8. So how do you feel about that?
Sad.
But you shouldn't be, because we're going to keep going anyways. Like, we're not going to stop.
Yeah, but that is so sad. Mm-hmm. Aw. But hey, 13. Lucky 13. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting.
Yeah, definitely. So that's why I thought of reminding you. And I do want to just go on record and say that I would like to discuss some stuff that we can do differently for the next season, which will start the week after this episode drops. So hopefully we can plan stuff out. So, yes. And the topic of this week's episode, Mariah, is none other than the 2022 version of the film Hellraiser. So, first impressions, couple of sentences, couple of thoughts. What are your first impressions?
It's definitely new age Hellraiser. It screams like this is the type of movie it would be made today. I mean, nothing will ever be like the original. So I think I had a little, maybe too high of expectations, but still, it was still just as good. I did wish there were more red, per se, as the original, but that's okay.
I would say that in the original, the blood was done with practical effects. And here, I don't think it was, or it didn't look like it to me. It looked more like CGI blood, but I could be wrong. So I don't know exactly what they used to show the blood. And there's not really a lot of gore in here either, surprisingly.
Yeah, that definitely caught me by surprise. Because when you think of Hellraiser, you think bloody and skin and bones, no skin. And so it was a different taste to the original, but still honoring the original too. So that's still really cool.
So that is something that we're going to discuss here in a minute. But before we do that, I want to give my first impressions. Like you, I agree that it's really difficult to surpass the originals of any remakes that have been done in the past, I don't know, 20 years maybe. I don't think any of them have been even as good as the originals. Some of them have been decent. I want to say the remake of Friday the 13th of 2009, which, wow, it's already going to be 15 years. Give or take.
It's too long.
Yeah. And speaking of that, just real quick on a little tangent here, I am excited, super excited, because they announced a series on Peacock about Jason Voorhees, so I'm super excited.
Ah! I did not even know that. What?
It's gonna be about his childhood, so I guess we're gonna see a lot more of how he was
Oh.
raised and what happened when he was a kid and stuff like that. And I guess eventually you're gonna see how he becomes Jason, but I'm really super excited for that series, so I'm surprised you didn't know
That's
about that.
amazing. Yeah, no, I heard about another one with Chucky or something, and I heard about it as a rumor last year, but I didn't see anything that they were going forward with it. So I didn't even know that. That's news to me. So I'm excited.
I haven't seen anything either in a couple of months, but I did see something on, I don't know what website it was, but they announced that it was going to be shown on Peacock, so I'm super excited for that.
Yeah, I mean, as fans, I feel like we definitely missed out on, I guess, exploring that side. So that's gonna be cool. Something to look forward to. So, yay.
So going back to Hellraiser, well, we were talking about remakes real quick. I was saying that I don't think any of them are as good as the originals, and some of them are decent. Like I mentioned, the Friday the 13th remake. Some people hated it, but I mean, it is a Friday the 13th movie. I don't know what you guys were expecting out there, the audience.
Absolutely.
It's about teens and like, or teens played by like 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds. But quote unquote teenagers in a cabin getting killed by Jason. So I don't know what you guys were expecting out there, to be honest. But then, of course, the Halloween remake of like 2018, was it? That
Yes.
one was pretty good. Then Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends took the series in a different direction. That was a little bit too weird for me. I still like the new trilogy, but I wish they could have done something better with it.
It's a different take onto the previous ones. I do agree with that.
Yeah.
It's like,
Now, the
whoa.
first one, though, the Halloween from 2018 or 17, whatever that year might have been, that one was good. I thought it was more in the spirit of the original movies. But then the other two kind of went in their own little direction. I think they smoked too much weed in the director's room, or
Okay.
drank a little bit too much liquor. But, anyways. So that one was decent, but besides that, it's really difficult to remake a movie because, first of all, you're facing the fans, and the fans are. Yeah,
Diehards.
I was gonna say something a little bit worse, but yeah. But yeah, let's go with diehards to keep this PG-13, shall we? And anything you do that is different from the original, the fans are going to hate, no matter what it is. Objectively speaking, I could be labeled as that kind of fan too, but I kind of want to give things a chance. And if I like the movie, I'll say, you know what? I like the movie, like the ones that I mentioned a little while ago. But for example, the Rob Zombie Halloween, nope, that movie does not exist for me. I don't ever intend to watch that movie ever again. It does not exist, ever. It was never made. It was a nightmare that I had when I saw it. Same thing with the Nightmare on Elm Street, coincidentally. That movie does not exist either. I never saw it. Never will see it. Well, I did see it, but I'm trying to forget it. because it's just too different, and the take that they went with for those films is just too different, and it's just not what I was looking for, I guess. And with this one, I don't know what I was expecting. I'm kind of lying there. I was expecting something along the lines of Hellraiser, which I mentioned earlier, the gore. And you would figure, Mariah, that this being the year, or back then, 2022, when this movie was released, that they would probably want to show more gore than the one from the 80s. And that's because the one from the 80s was gory. It had a lot of blood and a lot of body parts and skin being torn off. And this one surprisingly didn't have that, so how did that make you feel?
Sad.
So you expected to see more skin being peeled off of people's
Yes,
skeletons?
and more, definitely more blood. But it's a different take, I think, in today's version, perhaps. I don't know. It's a different time today than, again, like when the original was made. So I don't know how it didn't really feel too real as it did in the original. So I don't know. Those are my thoughts.
Would you say that it might have been because of the story itself or the Cenobites, the monsters, quote unquote, themselves?
I think it's a story. The story from the original seemed like something that can actually happen.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it definitely feels like that. But this one, it seems like a made-up story, like it wouldn't happen in real life. You know, it's like this fairy tale or some myth or something. I don't know. It doesn't feel genuine with the story.
I think I understand what you're saying, and it's kind of hard to explain, but I think I see your point because I agree with it. I do think the story in the original is better. Personally, I don't think I see it like it's something that's more likely to happen. I mean, I guess it could be. Because the first movie deals with a wife having an affair and betrayal and family drama. So it's kind of like a soap opera in a way.
Yeah,
Like a
like
novella.
a almost like a novella, yes, with the hair and the storyline. It seemed very like this can actually happen in real life. So it did give off that creepy vibe, like, whoa, this can actually happen, or just the thought of it. And with this one, it goes a different way to me.
Yeah, in the first one, the Cenobites aren't really shown until the last maybe like 25 minutes of the movie. And
Yeah.
you don't really know what's coming. I mean, you know this in the original, they have the box, the puzzle box, which is called the Lament Configuration. And by solving it, you open a gate to hell or whatever this place is. And the Cenobites come out and you can ask them for a favor or whatever, but it's not a nice favor they're gonna give you. Basically, they're gonna torture you to death. And in this one, the story is more about, I don't know. There is some family drama in this too, but it's kind of like, I don't know. Because it deals with something very serious also, which is addiction. And I definitely want to touch up on that in a minute. But I don't know. Like you, I feel like it's a little bit, I don't want to say forced. I don't think forced is the right word. But I think they overreached, if that makes sense. Like it's far-fetched. There it is. It's a little bit far-fetched. It's the word that I was looking for. So, of course, we're going to be comparing the original to this throughout the episode, but I guess we can start with the characters. For this one specifically, Maria, what do you think of the, let's go with the main girl first. Is she cool? Is she interesting? Is she not interesting? Is she,
I really liked her. What I think you're talking about, Riley, correct?
yes, uh-huh.
Yes, Riley. So I really did like her. She reminded me of some friend that I used to have back in the day and I used to hang out with for some reason stuff. I just definitely. It definitely that felt genuine. Her character line felt genuine to me. And yeah, I really liked her. She didn't seem snobby at all. It did feel at times when she would scream, I would get, whoa. I don't know why. It's just like, oh no, I'm sorry. Did I do something wrong? I don't know what it was, but she was amazing. I really liked her.
I think that speaks a lot about your personality because you're a very caring person and you're always trying to look out for people around you in general. But I didn't like her too much.
Oh no.
I feel like she was a little bit too exaggerated at some points. And mind you, it's a horror movie, so I'm not expecting award like Academy Award winning performances here. But I don't know. I mean, it's, and I hope I don't say something that sounds insensitive, but I don't know if she played the part of the addict the way it actually is in real life. Mind you, I've never been addicted to anything. I've never gone through that, thankfully. But it seems like that part of it, I didn't really feel like it was authentic for some reason. And I feel like, I mean, she did good. She did a good performance, but I think that part of it specifically, the part of the recovering at the addict, I don't know. That didn't really connect with me as far as what I think they were going for. Maybe I just don't get it. Maybe I didn't understand what was going on, but I feel like her performance as that kind of person, someone who's recovering from something like that to me didn't come across as done very well. Specifically talking about that part of her character. She does have like a character arc. In the end, I guess she matures a little bit and she grows, and we'll talk about the ending later on. So she does become somewhat different, and I guess she learns her lesson, quote unquote. But at a very high cost, doesn't she?
Yes, absolutely. I can definitely understand your point of view on that because I have too seen many recovering people in my life too, and the just the whole process of it all, it did seem a little bit not on camera as it was supposed to probably hopefully portray and get that awareness out. So yeah, I can definitely understand your point of view, but I think with her screaming did kind of give me a little bit like, oh no, I'm sorry type of thing. I don't know why, but I think that part just kind of got me a little bit. But other than that, I definitely understand where you're coming from and everything.
And then we have the boyfriend, which in the beginning he seems to be kind of I don't want to say naive, but kind of goofy. Not goofy, but I don't know what the word is. Like, do you understand what I'm
Yes,
trying to
absolutely.
say?
He comes off like I actually knew someone exactly like him. And it's not really shy or naive. It's just maybe goofy and I don't want to say embarrassing. But oh, cringy, maybe a little bit. I think cringy. I would go for cringy.
But also mixed with some like dorkiness. But eventually we find out that he's not really the kind of person he is pretending to be.
I know, that's horrible.
And then we have the girl's brother, Riley's brother, and I'm horrible with names, I'm sorry.
Matt is the brother. So it's Riley and her brother that she lives with. His name is Matt. And then her boyfriend is Colin. And their roommate, Nora.
And then what is the brother's boyfriend's name?
Trevor. Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Matt's boyfriend's name is Colin. And then Riley's boyfriend is Trevor. Yeah, I forgot. I got switched up with the
Yeah.
names. That's okay.
Okay, so we have a somewhat like a more extensive cast of people than we did in the original. In the original, the main characters are three or four of them, which were Frank, Larry, Julia, and Kirsty. And here we have maybe like six or seven main characters.
Yes, so with those two comparisons, I feel like the original was very easy to follow along. So with this one, you kind of had to pay attention just because there are so many different personalities that you have to kind of keep up with throughout the movie.
Yeah, and I know, Mariah, this is gonna seem like I am contradicting myself. And
Oh
it may be the beer speaking right now. But
no.
I've mentioned earlier to you in the past that when it comes to horror, I'm not really expecting, and I just mentioned that a couple minutes ago, actually. I am not expecting Academy Award-winning scripts or performances or anything like that. But when it comes to Hellraiser, there is a little bit more of that that I am looking for. Only because I am familiar with the writer's work, with Clive Barker, the author. And he is really good when you read his books at developing characters, at developing their personalities, their character arcs. Usually he does a really good job with that. And I was kind of hoping that that would translate to this movie also, because in the first movie it did. The first movie, it's awesome. It's different from the book, obviously. But the characters in that movie, in the first one, in the original, their performances are really good. Like we said, it's kind of like a soap opera. So take that as you may. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that you actually feel like they become their characters, the actors, if that makes sense. Right? In
Right.
the original. Whereas in here, I guess because we had so many characters and the movie can only be 2 hours long, whatever, you have less time to develop their personalities. So that kind of left me feeling a little bit hollow, especially because, once again, I was a huge fan of the original because of the performances.
Yes, I believe so. It's very scattered, I'd say. And yes, the performances of, and also I think I don't want to be super mean, but I feel in some ways there was lacking of passion within this movie than the original. The original had a lot of passion with just with every character. And so I feel with this new one, it is lacking a bit of passion within whatever they are going through. Some of the guy characters, I will say, does feel like they are forced to act in this character role. That's what I get from the guy characters. So yeah, I do feel that was lacking, is that true passion into the character and stuff.
If I am understanding you correctly, I think we are kind of looking at things the similar way, but kind of from a different angle, would that make sense?
Yeah,
So
I'd say so.
because I think what you're saying is basically what I'm trying to say also, that the acting was a little bit less good than I thought it would be, considering that it's a Hellraiser film. And mind you, the sequels are horrible. In the original series, I think the only decent ones are part one and two. And then part three gets points because it's super schlocky and funny and campy. But after that, it kind of becomes a little bit weird. But I'm talking about the original here because this is what I'm comparing this specific film to. So now, speaking of passion, chan-chan-chan. Another main component of the original work is there is a lot of sexual content because Clive Barker is really graphic when it comes to that kind of stuff. And in this one, surprisingly, also, there isn't really too much of that. And I don't mean that just in the sense of it being explicit. I mean, I'm not talking like, oh, I want more sex scenes in this movie. which I mean, I guess that would have been nice, but but that's not what I'm trying to say here. What I'm trying to say is the characters in the original, at least Julia for sure, they really explore that side of themselves very openly and very explicitly. Whereas here, that's not really anywhere to be seen. I mean, there are a couple of scenes in which Riley and her boyfriend go at it, but I mean, it's whatever. To me, it's kind of like just like, eh, like an afterthought kind of thing. But you see, even with the Cenobites themselves, the fact that they were clad in leather in the original, like the kind of like very S&M kind of thing, that is also like what I'm trying to say about it being more sexual than this one, than this version. This one, I think they were like almost naked, no?
Yes. They did show a lot of flesh bones.
Which you could make the argument that that is sexual, but not really. I mean, it depends on the context.
I didn't see it that way at all within this film
See, me either.
as sexual at all.
Me either. Like, I didn't see their lack of clothing or nudity or whatever it might have been as sexual, whereas in the first one, that whole leather getup and the spikes and everything is like, oh crap, that looks like a very sexually charged individual, monster, whatever it is. And yeah, so right off the bat, I mean, we're kind of it looks like we might be giving this movie a low score, but I don't know what you're gonna say at the end, so we'll keep that in suspense for now.
Oh
And
no.
because I mean, no, just basically based on what we've been talking about so far, it seems like we are thinking this movie is horrible. I didn't think it was horrible, so I'll just give that sneak preview. But I did not enjoy it anywhere near as much as the original, if that makes sense. So, the other thing that's different is the puzzle itself, the lament configuration. Because in the original Mariah, it really only stays in its cube form. I mean, it changes a little bit here and there. But typically, in the original film, a lot of the time, that puzzle, it looks like a Rubik's Cube type of thing. But in here, it's got several different shapes. And I was reading about it, and I hope you don't mind me going into this little nerdy tangent here.
Oh no, go ahead.
So, as soon as I can take this ad off my screen, because I can't scroll the screen down, hang on a minute, I'll refresh and reload. There it is. So, I am reading this from screenrant.com, and they mentioned the different versions of, or the different shapes the puzzle takes unto itself. So, the first one, Mariah, would be the one that we're familiar with, the lament configuration, the cube form, right?
Right.
Now, in the context of this movie specifically, and I don't want to spoil the ending here already, but basically what happens in this movie is this. If you come into possession of this box, Mariah, and you convince a few different people to try it out for you, and they cut themselves with this thing as they're trying to fix it, then the Cenobites come and take them, and you get closer to earning a quote unquote reward at the end. Right? So I believe you have to volunteer. Let's just say that nicely. You have to volunteer about six people for this. And at the very end, you can choose your reward, which can be one of the following: the lament configuration, which in this context of this movie stands for life. And once again, I'm not gonna go too much into that because that's about the ending. So hold your horses, guys. The other, or a second one rather, would be the lore configuration, which has to do with knowledge. And these things aren't really explored in the movie too much, but they're mentioned at some point. So no, and knowing the Cenobites, knowledge probably means that you figure out the secrets of the universe, and it's gonna just make you go insane, probably. Another possible reward is called Lotorent, which stands for love. And I don't even want to know what love means to I had a mental picture, but I'm not gonna say it because this is a PG-13 podcast, mind you. Liminal is a fourth category, or a fourth possible reward, which stands for sensation. And this is the one that one of the characters in this movie chooses. And we see how that turned out for him, the rich guy, Roland. So, you want to talk about how that turned out for him when he chose a reward? What happened to him?
Oh yes, that one. That was crazy. That was probably my favorite scene. Do I? But that's towards the ending, though.
You can talk about it. I mean, as long as, because we like to jump around this
That was my
podcast, so.
favorite. Yeah, that was definitely my favorite scene is that one. I believe he was the one that was having like his skin ripped off, right?
It was either his, I think it was his veins or his nervous system or something like
Yes. Oh, that looked.
that.
That was honestly my favorite part of the movie, other than everything else. And it was funny because I was excited to hopefully see a lot of red, and I didn't get to. So this was my favorite, and just it screams horror to me. It looked very cool. It almost reminded me of a skeleton. What is it? The anatomy, like an the anatomy body. So that was really cool to see. So yeah, apparently I think he undergoes like this brutal transformation into a new Cenobite, right? That's basically what
At the very
happens
end, yes.
at the
But
very
that
end.
is
But
after he
oh,
chooses another reward, though. So we'll get to that in a minute. But
That one was so creepy.
yeah, the first one he chooses is the liminal, the sensation, and basically, yeah, the Cenobites stab him through the chest with this machine-looking thing, and he is basically for life, or until he's able to cash in another reward. He is gonna have to have this machine go through his body or like impaled through his chest, whatever. And it's wrote like there's gears spinning around or something like that. And his veins or his nervous system or something is like tangled up in there. So it's always pulling on that and it's always causing him pain. And he even says at some point, just when, or something to the effect of this. It's always enough to keep going, but I never get a break, and I don't know, he was just really,
Yeah,
really, really torn up, but torn up about it, no pun intended. So yeah, that is what sensation means to the Cenobites. They basically torture you for life by having some sort of device poke you in the heart or whatever, the lungs. I don't know what it was, but it was pretty gruesome. But like you said, I do think this was, with the exception of what happens to, is it Nora or Norma? Nora, right?
yes, I think so.
Yeah, so that was is probably one of the goriest scenes in the film. And as far as the puzzle box goes, there's a couple more configurations. The Lazarus, which is resurrection. And the whole point is that Riley is trying to bring back her brother because the brother gets stabbed by the box on accident and the Cenobites take him. So she's trying to figure out a way to bring him back. And the last one is the Leviathan configuration, which is what happens to Roland in the end. He is able to cash in a second reward, and the Cenobites tell him, well, you're gonna get rewarded with power, and he basically becomes a Cenobite himself, and that's how the movie closes. But I kind of was looking forward to more explanation on this as far as what the other choices would mean for whoever is unfortunate enough to make them, but we only get enough details as to Lament, which is what Riley chooses at the end. And then we also get Liminal and Leviathan. So, by the way, let me ask you this right now. Do you think they might make a sequel to this?
I don't know if people would want a second movie with this one. I just because it was very hyped up as the main character being a woman, the Cenobite. So the fact that it ends with Roland, I feel it brings down the expectations for the audience, fans and stuff to get excited about a sequel. So I'm thinking maybe not. Maybe they weren't planning on making a sequel, just honoring it in some way. But if they were to, I hope they explore more of the female Cenobite, because that would be really cool. And I think that's why I was so excited. I thought they were going to bring more her into it, and they didn't really do much. So it made me sad. I'm all depressed.
So yes, once again, it looks like this movie's getting a low score,
Yeah.
huh? Well, let's save that
I
for
feel
later.
so bad saying that,
Let's
but
save that for later. So
I don't think they came in the intention of maybe making a sequel. I don't. What do you think? Do you think there is going to be a sequel for this one?
I think the movie did good enough that they might consider doing one. Now, I don't know if they're gonna go with the same characters as far as continuation for Riley and what happens to her after this, or if they're gonna choose a completely different cast of people and tell their story. If they, in fact, do make the sequel, theoretically speaking. And since you brought the female Cenobite into the conversation already, how do you compare her to the original Pinhead?
Very different. I feel with her, it was very fleshy instead of with the, I don't know if it's called latex, with
It's just kind of like
the
leather, I guess.
leather.
Yeah.
Yeah, leather. I don't want to say latex. That sounds weird. Yeah, with the leather. And I thought her style, honestly, reminded me of the 90s. For some reason, I think it was the lipstick that was getting to me. I just kept saying 90s and lipstick. And maybe that's what they were trying to go for, more of a grunge 90s girl instead of a different version. I was hoping for more gore on her, but it didn't really seem that way. It seemed more flesh and bone, not too crazy on the gore. And I thought they were going to go a little bit different with maybe her face too, such as maybe showing a little bit more blood with, of course, they did add quite a little bit of the makeup stuff with, to make her look the way she did. So, yeah, I was really confused with that. I didn't know what they were trying to do with her. If they were trying to just make her go with like a 90s, more 90s look. And that's what she kind of came on to me with the style. So,
So, even when it comes to her look, then you were disappointed.
I don't want to say disappointed, just oh man, I'm in the hot seat. I'd probably say just I was hoping they would do
Okay, that sounds a little bit more positive.
more blood perhaps, just because the original Pinhead, he looks, well, again, I don't know. Pinhead did look a little bit like 90s too in some ways.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could be wrong.
No,
No.
I don't know if I understood you, but I'll give you my take on this.
Okay, yes, please.
And maybe we can try to figure something out if we agree or not on this. In the first movie, the Cenobites aren't really the focus of the movie, of the plot, really. On the first movie, the focus would be the family drama, the characters. Their interactions with each other, specifically Frank and Julia. And in this one, I feel like they were kind of trying to go for the same thing, maybe keeping the Cenobites a little bit more in the background, And I think they did it too much to the point that, not that I wasn't, or rather, not that I was disappointed, rather. But I feel like I would have liked to see more of them in this movie. I feel like I would have liked to see them doing more and just getting more screen time, really. And as far as the performances, I think the actress in this film did really good with the character. It's really difficult, once again, to step into the shoes of someone like Doug Bradley, who did such an iconic performance in the 80s. And mind you, I do think his performance was superior to hers. But I think she did pretty good. And see, the other thing is that the Cenobites, specifically Pinhead, they are really intellectual. They're really intelligent. Not just smart, but I mean, they're intelligent. They speak really properly, and they use all these big words. And here, I feel like, I don't know if they were trying to look out for her in the sense that they didn't want to overexpose her too much, because that would give people more things to say, negative things about her, if that makes sense.
I definitely agree, like trying to protect, I guess, her character and the portrayal of her. I can definitely see that. I wanted to kind of check out the photos of her more because I did realize they didn't really show, I feel like they didn't show too much of her in the film. And perhaps it could be more explored in a sequel.
Yeah, if they do make one, I also want to point out that I always thought the Cenobites were more, it's going to sound weird to say this, but kind of elegant in a way. They had this personality to them that you kind of, me personally, I always consider that to be elegance, and that sounds so weird to say, because they're wearing all this leather and blood and hooks and pins and nails and screws in their faces and stuff. But the same thing with that I was talking about earlier, like the appearance of the Cenobites in this. I mean, they look scary. The makeup looks really creepy, I would say. But I would say that even with how limited things were back in the 80s, I think the look of the Cenobites back then was, to me, a little bit more elegant, more gruesome in a way. And I mean, it may sound like I am just speaking out of nostalgia for the 80s. And I guess part of it might be that the case. I'm not gonna lie. But I mean, it's just, I feel like there were a lot of things missing from this movie that it just didn't hit me in the right way. I don't think, like the first one did. So I don't know. I mean, as far as the other Cenobites, they looked kind of creepy too. I mean, there's Chatterer comes back, which is the one with the teeth. Like, that guy comes back. And I think the bald one is supposed to be the one they called Deep Throat.
Oh, yes.
And then there's another one, I think. But I don't know. It's kind of hard to sound like I'm being objective and impartial here without saying that, I mean, I just like the 80s version a lot more. Now, I don't know if I asked you this already. If I did, I'm sorry. But do you know by chance if this movie is a sequel or is it a remake?
That's really hard to ask because, in some ways, it did feel like a sequel, but in other ways, it feels like a remake. So I think it is a remake, but I'm not necessarily sure. I didn't look into if this was a sequel. I thought it was a remake.
That's what I thought too, that it was supposed to be a remake or a reboot type of thing.
Does it say something different?
It's because I was watching some internet reaction dudes to get kind of their take on stuff, which I actually do sometimes, by the way. and see what they think about it. And one of the people that I saw called this movie a sequel. I don't know if he made a mistake or if he thought it was a sequel, whatever. So that kind of made me wonder, like, is this really a sequel or a reboot? Like, I'm not sure anymore. So who knows? Unless they explain that to us eventually.
Yeah, hopefully they do. I do remember seeing I think it was an article somewhere, and they did mention that this was a remake on the article. So I can't tell you for sure. I'm not 100% sure.
So, I guess we can start going over the key points of the plot here finally, after almost an hour in. No, but I think we've been discussing a lot of stuff that pertains to the movie as far as the characters and the look, the plot, etc. Well, not the plot, because that's what we're going to talk about right now. But essentially, Riley is a recovering addict who is dating this dude who gets her involved in this case, whatever. Because she is down in her luck, her brother, not that he hates her, but he's really kind of starting to get fed up with her. Because he took her into his home, her being a recovering addict and all, as difficult as that might be for someone. And it seems like she keeps making the wrong choices all the time. So he's getting frustrated, and he makes it seem like, hey, I'm just looking out for you. But she feels like he is butting into her life too much. And so she dates this guy, and he convinces her to steal this thing from this warehouse that he's worked at before, which is, in fact, the puzzle box. And that is how this whole thing unfolds. She gets into a fight with her brother. Because she comes home drunk one night after stealing the box. He kicks her out of the house. And then she does pills and she basically gets stoned out of her mind in the playground after doing these pills. And her brother finds her, and this is when the drama starts. And the brother pokes himself with the blade that is protruding from the puzzle box. And that is how he ends up being sacrificed or volunteered for this. And they don't even show him being taken away, do they?
No, I didn't. I did not even catch that.
Well, it's because they don't show it.
Yeah.
You didn't catch it because you.
Now you're making me think like, whoa, did I miss
No,
something?
you didn't catch it because it's not shown on camera. So see, that's a big difference with the first movie, like we said earlier. That in the first movie, every kill, every instance of violence is shown in the movie. Now, it is still done very tastefully, mind you. And that is why I like that movie so much, because I am generally, Mariah, not a huge fan of gratuitous violence. When I feel like it's overdone, I don't like the movie anymore. So, for example, I can't enjoy movies like Saw or Hostel because I think the violence in those films is, in my point of view, to my taste, overdone. Now, for some people, that's what they need to get into a horror movie, and that's okay. That's their preference. It's kind of like where you come into the picture. You like the blood and the gore and everything spilling out on the floor, which is fine. Yeah, I mean, but the reason why I like the first one so much is because, in spite of the fact that they show so much, I think it's still done in a very tasteful way. So I think they strike a near perfect balance between both of them, between both points.
Okay, so that's more of your take and the horror preference that you love. Yeah, well, like blood.
Yeah, and you're like, I quit this podcast right now. I thought I was talking to a fellow bloodhound.
No, that's okay. But I think that's amazing because, in a way, you're not, we have different opinions on and different takes. So that's what makes it amazing, I think, and just the different levels of the love for horror.
Yeah, and I mean this is important because eventually they track down, I think it was the lawyer of the rich guy, Roland. She's dying in this clinic or something like that. She's barely even able to speak and walk around. So they track her down. They bring the puzzle to her after the brother's been taken. And then she gets stabbed with a blade. So that means she's next. And as with the first dude, they kind of show the Cenobites creeping up on her little by little. But I don't think we see the point in which they take her, do they?
No, I did not catch that if that happened.
I don't think it happened on screen either. See, like I am pretty sure it didn't, actually, because I would remember. I think I would remember if something like that did happen on screen.
So they did leave out, I would probably say, a lot of stuff that a story, they didn't answer a lot of things, I felt like.
Well, then again, there's the people that say, well, the less you show, the more effective a monster is, quote unquote. Which is
Oh.
kind of like, if you think about a movie like Jaws, for example, the one about the shark, you hardly even see the shark in the whole movie. I think you see the shark like in five scenes altogether. But you know the shark is around because it's eating people and you see the fin and over the water or whatever. Same thing, I guess, with this. I mean, you see the Cenobites kind of walking around and talking to the person, like, hey, we're coming for you. We're here. We're going to take you with us. And if that is what they were going for, I feel like that fell short too. Oh, man, I feel like such a snobby movie critic tonight.
Reminds me of those restaurant Yelp people. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. The server did not give me free napkins. One star.
That's funny.
Of course, everyone has their opinions and their tastes and stuff like that. So there are movies in which seeing less of what happens on screen is a little bit more effective and it makes the movie a little bit scarier. Also, a movie like the first Alien movie, for example, from the 70s, where you hardly even see the alien in the spaceship until the very end, almost. So they take the lady without us knowing what they did to her eventually. They take her. And so Riley keeps exploring the internet. She finds all these resources. She finds out where the guy used to live. So she sneaks into his mansion. And then the boyfriend and the roommate and the brother's boyfriend find her in the mansion. And we find out that Roland has been living in the walls of his house for all this time. And so he stabs Nora with the puzzle box. And she gets volunteered for this sacrifice thing. And hers is, I think, the kind of scene that I was looking for more in this film. Because we do see how the Cenobites come for her, and we do see what like them talking to her after she gets captured by the hooks and the chains, and you see her being completely terrified. She starts to pray, and then Pinhead kind of makes fun of her, like, "What are you praying for? Like, what's the point of that?" kind of thing. So that scene is pretty much what I was looking for more of throughout the whole movie, Maria. I don't know how you feel about that.
I would say that definitely was something I was looking forward to as well. It also she also had a sweater on, I think, or like a long sleeve. So it I felt she was not as terrifying looking for some reason. I don't know. I don't know. It felt like somebody like in their PJs.
You mean Nora?
Yes.
So
Don't you agree?
you're judging her based on her apparel choices?
It didn't really seem like a spooky scene. And yes, I would probably be feeling probably the same way as her, just how scared in that moment is. But again, it's really hard to compare it to the original. It
Yeah.
didn't give me that terrifying feeling of what they did in the first one. And it's a very similar scene, which is so good, but again, not as scary, but the thought of it is scary for sure to be in that position. But yeah, I didn't really see that whole scene as scary. I was really looking forward to it being at least similar to the first one, but it didn't give me that. It gave me PJs. That's what
That is hilarious. So,
it
note self, if I ever make a horror movie, I need to make sure people get killed in what suits, Maria?
That would be kind of cool. I'm just kidding.
That is hilarious. Okay, no, but I mean, it's your opinion, so that's. I just think it's funny that you specifically pointed out the fact that she's wearing pajamas. I can't remember what she's wearing. I thought she was wearing jeans, but whatever.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm also like on heavy medicine too with the being sick and stuff, so I'm a little like, woo.
Oh yes, because we did mention, or I mentioned on Twitter, by the way, that we didn't have an episode last week because you had been sick. So it's good thing you're feeling better. So,
Yes.
but you see, that's kind of what I was looking for. And the thing is, then you run into the risk of overdoing that kind of thing. So, I mean, I think if I had gotten at least one more scene like this, I think I would have been satisfied. In which you see the person realize that their life is almost over. And in Nora's case, she starts to pray, and because that's basically the last thing she can think of doing before she dies. And then the Cenobites, specifically Pinhead, in being this cynical, intellectual being, the first thing they say is, what is it that you're praying for? Like, is it salvation? Because there's no satisfaction in that. Like, we can give you satisfaction, but praying for salvation, that's not gonna get you anything, right? So that's the kind of exchange that the original Pinhead would have made with one of his victims in the original movie, I think. And that is when I saw this scene, I was like, yeah, finally, it's getting to the point that I wanted to get to. And this was basically the only scene in which this happened. So I was like, aw. So of course, Nora's life is over. And more stuff happens. Well, actually, I guess the one interesting thing about this is that Roland's house is kind of like an anti-Cenobite fortress. Because when the cage is deployed, the Cenobites can't go into his house. They can't move. So
Oh, yeah.
I wonder, how did he figure that out? How did he figure out that building this around his house would protect him? Because I don't think they explain that, do they?
No, they do not. But apparently, he has some secrets up his sleeve.
So, what do you think that is? Is that some sort of like a, I don't know, like spell for protection? Like, what do you think it is?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that hocus pocus with the salt, and you just like put it around you in a circle and you're protected, and with garlic in the door and stuff. I don't know. It's really tricky to kind of understand that scene because it's like, how did you come up with this? And how did you know it would work? And it definitely leaves a lot of questions to the audience to kind of question things. But yeah, I definitely agree. It's probably a protection spell for sure.
The only thing that I can re remember them saying is that this guy Roland has done research on the Cenobites, like a lot of research. So that may be how he came across this cage design for his house. But that is never really explained to us in the film. And so eventually Riley figures out that I guess she can trap these things in the house and ended this whole thing. And then we find out that the boyfriend is in fact a douchebag because He lied to her about everything. He was working with Roland the whole time. He was trying to find victims for him to claim a second reward because he wanted to be rid of this thing that is sticking out of his chest. So basically, Roland's plan was for this guy to convince someone, in this case his girlfriend, to volunteer people so that he could get out of the mess he got himself into. Roland, that is. And eventually, yeah, they both win their reward. Roland gets to be rid of this thing, but then he becomes a Cenobite at the very end. And Riley is given a choice. Well, what reward do you want? And she says, I don't want anything. Because you guys are gonna twist my words and you're gonna come up with some weird thing and I'll be tortured for my whole life or whatever. So then Pinhead is like, huh? So you choose the lament configuration. You choose to live with the consequences of your choices. And then they disappear. So I think this comes back full circle to what I was saying earlier about Riley's character arc. Because in the beginning, I mean, honestly, she kind of comes across as like a spoiled brat in some scenes. And I mentioned that, I mean, it's difficult to sound insensitive or to not make it seem like I'm insensitive. But again, she's playing the part of a recovering addict, right? And so that is something that I've never gone through personally, but I would imagine it's a very difficult ordeal to go through. And maybe that explains why she makes the choices she makes in the beginning of the movie. She's always doing the wrong thing for her and for everyone around her. And at the end, instead of trying to make her brother come back like her plan was this entire time, she finally decides, you know what? No, it's time that I own up to my mistakes. It's time that I grow up, quote unquote, as a person. So I choose to live with the consequences of my actions. So my actions led my brother to die and all these people around me to die also. And that's something that I'm gonna have to carry in my conscience forever. I think that's pretty heavy. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't want to carry that heavy load of a guilt and stuff. It's a huge pain, I can imagine, to carry forever.
That's basically the movie, the plot of the movie. We do see at the very end, the only survivors are Riley and the brother's boyfriend. And then, of course, we see at the final scene how Roland is being transformed into a Cenobite. And that looks kind of painful. That looks a little bit painful from what I gather. So, before Mariah, we move on to the scores. There's a couple of fun facts I want to share with you, if you don't mind.
Yay!
So, of course, I'm gathering these from IMDb.com. And they asked Doug Bradley his opinion on the new Pinhead. And he had positive things to say. He said the following: I am a bit blown away by this. The clever redesign of the makeup, the shimmer of the pinheads, the palette, whatever that keyhole locket tracheotomy thing is at the throat, it's simple, subtle, disturbing and sexy. Everything it should be. Peace and pain, Doug. So, what do you make of
I can probably agree with the neck part.
that?
I definitely agree with that one. Simple. It felt very hard to kind of follow, honestly, because there were too many characters, I feel like. So that was not simple for me.
Ha 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 ha.
And sexy, I would probably say, like, yeah, maybe, like, I guess, like, she's beautiful, the Cenobite, the girl and stuff. It definitely reminded me of the 90s. They did really good, I think, with the makeup. It did feel like I was maybe not seeing a lot of her as I wish I would have. And maybe I think that would have given me more to talk about. So yeah, I did feel a lot of like I guess like limited, I would probably say. But yeah, it was definitely not simple, for sure. Simple, no. That's not what I'm getting from this movie at all. So
Yeah, I kind of agree with a couple of things about this with Doug Bradley also. Like, I am someone, he is awesome, but I always thought he was a very gracious actor. So I think I believe him when he said he liked the movie or the performance of the new Pinhead. But I also think he's the kind of guy that wouldn't say anything
anything negative.
that is too highly negative. Yeah, I think he would have kept from saying that because he comes across to me as a gentleman as far as like a when it comes to talking about his fellow actors. Now he has mentioned some things in the past about other movies in the Hellraiser franchise, but that's movies that he was a part of, so I guess he can criticize his own performances a little bit more openly. This movie was filmed in the European country called Serbia, Mariah, so
Oh,
it is
that's
not
really cool.
shot in the United States, and it wasn't filmed in Canada either, which are usually popular destinations for this kind of thing. But actually, a lot of movies in the horror genre are filmed in Europe. So there's something about Europe and horror.
It's probably because I know I've had like fans send me stuff from the UK, and they say it's because they don't get a lot of spooky stuff as we do here in the US. So that can be a huge thing. Like here we have Salem, we have a lot, and we have Halloween that children get to go do. And apparently, from what my fans have told me, that they do not have Halloween over there. They don't celebrate. They don't even sell Halloween stuff in stores. So it is kind of sad. So maybe they have to do this type of stuff, like shooting and stuff with the filming and everything, with shooting a film and stuff, because maybe they don't get that excitement as they do here in the US. They have to go and get the horror fans and stuff. I don't know. But that's what I've been told. So I'm very happy I'm here in
If
the
that is indeed true, I am speechless. I have no idea that, or I
I don't know
had no
what I would
idea.
do if there wasn't any Halloween in stores. I would be so sad. Can you imagine
No.
not having any Halloween stuff? That is so sad.
I cannot conceive of that life, Mariah.
Yeah. So.
That is horrible if that is indeed the case. And well, moving on to the next one here. Do you remember who Tony Todd is?
Not the name, but probably the face if I look it up.
He's got a hook in his hand.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So, Candyman, the actor who played Candyman
Yes,
in the first couple
yes, yes,
movies.
yes, yes. I always forget his name. I remember his face.
I bring him up because I didn't know this at all. I just discovered this right now as I'm reading it. And I am very thoroughly surprised by this. But when the brother is looking for Riley and she finds and he finds her rather in the playground, and he goes into the restroom to to wash the blood off his hands, whatever, there is a graffiti on the wall that is, in fact, Tony Todd's autograph.
What?
So
No way.
I don't know if they copied it from somewhere or if he himself went and graffitied the wall there.
I can see that happening actually. Like, come in, graffiti this
Like,
wall,
hey, you
please.
mind flying to Europe for like a day and you can graffiti this bathroom for us?
Yeah, stunning.
That would be pretty cool, actually. And on top of that, there is another little Easter egg right next to that. There is a drawing of what appears to be the Blair Witch stick figurines.
What?
So,
No, you're kidding.
I'm reading this on IMDb, so I'm.
No way. Oh, I'm gonna have to check that back now. That one was scary back in the day. I think I watched it when I was 8 years old and I was terrified. That is so cool though. Wow. I love when movies do that, when they honor other horror movies.
I mean, they're always kind of helping each other out, I think, in some way or another. And a couple more before we move on to the scores, Mariah. They actually asked Doug Bradley to make a cameo for this. I don't think he would have come out as Pinhead. I think he would have just been like a regular dude in this. But I don't know. It's not specified here. But Bradley said no because, one, COVID was still kind of going on quite a bit when this movie was filmed. And two, see, this is what I meant. He's a really gracious man, really proper. He says he didn't want to interfere with his Pinhead legacy, given that they had a new actor playing the role. So
Oh, that's very respectful, I'd say.
Yeah, see, this guy is awesome. And the last bit of information here, Mariah, there's a lot more, but we only have time for this one, last one, is that it took around more or less 4 hours to apply the Cenobite makeup.
What?
So can you imagine, like, if you go to work and like, hey, you gotta sit in this chair for 4 hours, you can't move, you can't do anything, and we're gonna cover your face and all this plastic and prosthetics and pins and needles and yeah. On top of that, you gotta act for so many hours today, and at the end, it's gonna take us about an hour to take it off from you. So.
That would blow my mind.
Oh,
I don't think I would have the patience.
definitely not. Yeah, no, I don't think so. So, Mariah, I guess it is time for us to finally jump into the scores for this. So, how many hooks to the face does this movie get from you out of 10, and why?
I feel so bad. This is horrible. I would probably, from my honest opinions, probably
Four.
four
Wow.
chains.
Wow, that is, I think, the lowest score you've given to one of our movies. No,
Have I?
or has it been? I
I don't
think
know.
you've typically stayed above six for most of them, I think. It's been a while since I remember you saying anything lower than a six, if at all, really. But I mean, wow. That
Yeah, I'd
is.
probably say four chains to the face because it didn't seem as horror to me. But that's just my opinion. I did wish I could see more, of course, of the main character, and just get more answers and see more of the Cenobite, hopefully, if they make another one. That's what I was really excited about and just not getting as much as I hoped for. Just probably just me. Or yeah, it did make me sad. So I'd probably just want to be honest with my feelings.
That's perfectly fine. I mean, it's your opinion, and we obviously respect that here. And I am going to meet you halfway with this and give this movie a 5. Because of, I mean, we pretty much covered everything, didn't we? As far as why it was we felt this movie didn't really do it for me personally. I don't think it's a terrible movie, but I wouldn't really recommend it to a horror fan, if that makes sense. I don't know.
I don't think I would suggest this movie either to a horror fan. Maybe if they like how you had your take on this with the tastefulness and all of that, and how much you appreciated that, maybe an original fan of the movie would appreciate that too. I can definitely suggest it to someone who's a fan from the original. I would say. It's funny because everyone I've talked to have told me how much in love they are with this movie. So.
Again, it's not a terrible movie. It's not like, oh my God,
No.
stay away from this at all costs. Don't ever watch it in your life. But I have to be objective, and well, it's kind of a mixture of both objective and subjective, because I did obviously compare this movie to the original a lot. But how can you not? Really? How can you not compare this movie to the original when it's, if it's not a sequel, if it's a remake, I mean, it's part of the same series, it's part of the same universe of characters. So, the same kind of mythology. So, it's not really possible to not compare this to the original, unless you haven't seen it. And even then, at some point, I would say you would, if you see this as a fan, you would feel like you have to see the first one. And see, the thing is this, if you see this one first, someone who's a younger fan out there, maybe in their early 20s or even their teens, if they go back and see the first one, they probably think that one's boring. Because of all the
Oh,
family,
yeah.
drama stuff. So
Family Trump.
it's like, am I watching a horror movie or a novella, man? Come on. So it's maybe just a it's got to do with the times, I guess, what kind of generation you're from, I guess, part of it.
I agree with that, definitely. It is filmed in a different time than it was in the 80s. And yeah, just a different take on horror. And but still, I did appreciate this movie though. The fact that they were able to have the Cenobite female and stuff. And I hope to see more of her and stuff. That was amazing to me.
That's why I'm kind of hoping they do make a sequel to this. Because I do feel like she could have gotten more screen time. And once again, explore more of the personality of her character, of Pinhead. Because that's one of the things that I like in the original character a lot. I mentioned he's really smart, he's really intelligent, he's really sophisticated. He speaks in all these high-level words, and it's like, oh man, it sounds like a professor or something, like in college. So I get the idea that they may have been trying to shield her from getting too much exposure. Because of course, I mean, the controversy of her being a female playing a character that was played by a male in the past. And to me personally, that's nonsense. That has no effect on me not liking the movie or giving the movie a score that some people might think it's too low. Not at all. I mean, I think she did okay with what she had to work with. But I do feel like she was not given enough time to explore the character. So I do hope that in the, if they do make a sequel to this, that they do give her more prominence, that she is more featured in the movie. So now to the Cenobites, Mariah. How many skulls out of 10 do they get? How scary are they?
I'm gonna go with a six.
Okay. Fair enough. I shall give them a 6 as well. And this has more to do with their appearance.
Yeah, I definitely loved Pinhead's the neck part of it. Oh, it's so beautiful looking.
Yeah, and see, the appearance of this pinhead, as far as her face is concerned, and I can't remember about the body, but at least the face and the fact that she's got more of a female tinted voice, that is more in line with the original book. Because in the original book, Pinhead wasn't even called Pinhead, by the way. That is the nickname that was given to the character, and it stuck. But Pinhead was supposed to have on the pins on their face jewels like sticking out of them. So this one didn't really have jewels, but it looked like she had some sort of crystals or something like that. It was kind of shiny, I think, like in the very, very tip of the pins, if I remember correctly.
I did notice that too. I loved the book. Oh, it was so beautiful. I loved it. I remember reading the book first and then watching the film, and I absolutely was blown away just how beautiful a story it was.
I have the book in my nightshelf. I gotta read it again. It's a really short book. You can finish it in a couple of hours, maybe. But I need to read it again. I haven't read it in years. So, as far as the Cenobites, yeah, their appearance is a little bit, I think, underwhelming compared to the first film. I think I needed to see more leather, more whips. Yeah, but it's just me personally, just comparing them to the original. As far as their abilities, I think they are in the same level as the other ones, as the originals. So, but again, I feel like the originals looked more menacing. Even when I said that they looked sophisticated and elegant, they also looked more menacing than these did, for to me, at least. So that is why I am going with the Six Mariah. Anything else you might want to add before we end our episode tonight?
Nope, I don't think so.
So, Mariah, we have concluded the episode on the 2022 version of Hellraiser. I do hope our audience doesn't hate us after this.
It's funny because it's like the last one of the
Yeah.
season. So that's funny.
Yeah, we're like kind of ending on a Debbie Downer note for them. See, but at least I feel like we gave good reasons as to why this movie was kind of underwhelming for us. I don't know if you agree.
Yes, definitely. I think our reasons back us up on the reason why.
I mean, of course, it's our opinions, but see, this is where I feel like it's important to say, like, and I always bring this movie up, but for example, Midsommar. When I talk about it and I see how people are in love with that movie, I'm like, oh my God. But
Who are you?
way back when, and I haven't listened to that episode in forever, and I don't think I will because I probably sucked back then. Not that I guess I'm a little better now. But back when Monica was a co-host, we talked about Midsommar because she said it was one of the scariest movies she had ever seen.
Wow.
And I saw it and I was falling asleep like within the first 20, 30 minutes.
Aww. I remember just laughing with that one.
Granted, I mean, I was tired by that because I was kind of watching it. I remember it was late at night, but anyways. I did stay awake, mind you, and I. But I was like, "Oh my God, this movie's so long." And but when we did the episode, I tried to do what I did tonight. I tried to give reasons that were valid enough as to why that movie did nothing for me. It wasn't just me saying, "Oh, this movie sucks. It's terrible. Ah, like whatever." Like no, like I actually kind of try to explain myself a little bit. So that's kind of what I like to do, Mariah. When I don't like a film, I like to kind of give decent reasons as to why I don't. But yeah. So if you're out there and you listen to this episode and you love this movie, don't hate us. And well, we have officially ended season 8, Mariah, of our podcast. And like I mentioned in the beginning of this segment, I do want to discuss some plans with you as far as
some possible changes that we might make to our podcast format in the next few weeks. So
yay.
If you're out there in the audience, stick around for that. It's going to be more of the same, but maybe a little bit more streamlined, a little bit more organized, hopefully. I try to do that tonight, actually. I try to kind of keep the discussion to one specific thing at a time, as opposed to what we've done in the past, we just jump around. Which that's fine too. I mean, I guess it's part of our style, but I do kind of want to keep things a little bit more focused in the future, Mariah, if you're okay with that.
Of course.
Uh-huh. And I'm big time guilty on that. I like to meander a lot. I like to just go off on tangents and talk about weird stories and things. So anyways, yes. And I want to remind everyone out there that you can find us on linktree.com/MythsBehindLGDS. And on there, you can find all of our links to our social media accounts, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. So I encourage you guys to go on there and follow us. Give us a like, a comment, whatever it is you feel like doing. And if you are listening to us on a service that allows you to score our podcast, by all means, do give us that top rating because we deserve it, because we are cool like that, aren't we, Mariah?
Absolutely.
So, that'll be pretty much everything I have to say for this episode, Mariah, and for this season. If you're out there in the audience, stay away from creepy puzzle boxes. Stay away from people with pins sticking out of their face. And until we see you on the next one, have a good one.